Hello, listeners, and welcome to episode 11 of The Partial Historians. I am one of your hosts, Dr. Peter Greenfield.
And I am your other host, Dr. Radford.
Welcome.
Thank you.
And today we are going to be looking at the subject, the infamous subject, perhaps.
Oh, yes.
Drumroll. Gaius Caesar.
That's right. Otherwise known to history as Caligula.
Little boots.
Aw, so cute, but he's not cute at all.
Or is he? He seems quite cute in his statues.
That's true. So we talked a little bit last episode about how Julia Major was so important to the eventual succession. This is, I think, the perfect instance of that.
And these are the fruits
things
of her
labor.
These
are the fruits of her labor. So unfortunately, and for one of her daughters. However, there is yet one remaining golden child.
The last child of Julia Mayer, who actually does anything of significance.
Yes, exactly.
She actually lives long enough to do something.
She actually does quite a lot of significance in that she marries Germanicus. Sorry, then I should probably say her name rather than referring to her as a her. This is Agrippina the Elder.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, and so she marries Germanicus, who's a very popular member of the imperial family, who we sort of touched on a little bit with Tiberius.
Yeah, suave. The guy that everybody likes.
Exactly.
And they saw Tiberius and go, that man's boring.
Yeah.
And Germanicus walks in the room and everyone's like, I want to have a drink with that dude.
It's all about Germanicus. Germanicus and Agrippina become sort of this, you know, celebrity couple. Completely.
Yeah.
Germanicus is basically the son of Tiberius's brother Drusus, the beloved brother that died so young. tragic. But he lives on in Germanicus.
He lives on in Germanicus.
Yeah.
And Germanicus and Agrippina together are like the Kim Kardashian and Kanye West.
They totally are. And they do something which, you know, I'm sure all Rome applauded. They produce 9 children. Wow.
Oh my God, what a uterus.
And
Roman
amazingly,
men would be drooling every time she walked into a room.
Exactly. Amazingly, 6 of those 9 children survive.
Yeah, that's pretty good rates, really.
Given
mortality in the ancient world, that's...
And given the way the imperial family's been going on. It is impressive, yes.
They have lost a few.
Yeah. So unfortunately, things don't go quite... don't continue to be all rosy for Agrippina and some of her children.
What?
I know. Again, we probably touched on this. Yeah, we probably touched a little bit on this with Tiberius in that 2 of her sons, Nero and Drusus, come unstuck.
Oh yeah. Now these two, they're victims of the sort of the purges that happened under Tiberius.
I take umbrage with the word victim.
Well, ultimately, they die.
Yeah, but we can't say for sure they didn't get up to something. Okay, fine.
We could go down this path.
Okay, Look, Tiberius kind of drops the ball a little bit.
On his own family members.
Yeah.
And lets some of them get killed.
Yeah, he never, as we mentioned, he never gets along particularly well with Agrippina the Elder or Germanicus. Germanicus dies quite suddenly, and this seems to make relations with Agrippina the Elder actually worse.
Yeah.
Tiberius is a little bit harsh with her, I suppose, in the sense that he doesn't let her remarry after. I mean, she's devastated, of course. Yeah, she has the whole accompany the ashes back, blah, blah, blah.
She's very loyal to Germanicus, but
yes.
It's not necessarily clear that she has any love loss for Tiberius. And Tiberius's treatment of Agrippina kind of sets her on edge.
Yes, and they just don't gel well.
So we've got a sort of a family faction building up with Tiberius on one side and Agrippina and her remaining children on the other.
Exactly. I mean, Agrippina might have, I mean, Augustus seems to have really liked her. But probably for similar reasons, Tiberius disliked her in that she seems to have been quite brazen. You know, she's not afraid to put herself out there. She seems to have accompanied Germanicus on some of his military commands.
Yeah. She's seen, routinely in the sources, she's accompanying him out on campaign. And famously, when we're thinking about Caligula's life.
Exactly.
They're out in sort of Germania in 14 when Augustus dies and...
Things go so terribly wrong.
Things go wrong. There's a bit of an uprising from the soldiers for a number of reasons, but one of the sort of the mythos of Caligula that's built up at this time is that as a toddler, Caligula is there with Agrippina and Germanicus on the front line.
Absolutely. One of the very theatrical ways Germanicus tries to deal with his revolt.
Parading his child in front of the soldiers saying, are you going to let your whims and desires overcome, you know, the sacredness of the Roman society.
Absolutely, because they
look at this child.
Yeah, they apparently adore this toddler.
They sort of saw him as a mascot.
Exactly, and that's where he gets his name, his nickname Caligula.
Yeah, because they dressed him up as a little soldier, and everybody thought that was so cute.
Yeah, and therefore he wore little boots.
Yeah.
And so yeah, Germanicus, you know, makes this big show of sending away his child and his wife because
it's too dangerous.
It's too dangerous. And of course that, you know, does make the soldiers stop and think a little bit.
And I'm not sure that I really believe this story.
It's the mythos.
A large part to do with building up sort of Caligula's credentials to
rule
and his sort of charisma with the soldiers.
But I mean, the fact that it's told, you know, I mean, you know, the fact that, you know, it doesn't seem odd that Agrippina's there, you know, like this kind of story is possible, you know.
Yeah, for sure.
She's certainly a prominent person, and after a suitable amount of time has passed, she probably, you know, she probably should have been allowed to remarry, I suppose. But of course, again, when we're talking about this new system where it's basically an imperial family, you can understand why Tiberius wasn't super keen to marry this woman with Augustus's blood in her veins, where he has none, off to someone else, because she doesn't like him and she could cause problems.
And it's going to create political issues down the line. It's pretty clear that this is now turning into a dynastic sort of thing.
Exactly. Yes.
Tiberius has to think very carefully about how he's going to play it.
Yeah.
So he is still sort of in charge enough to have his wishes known.
Yes. And so basically Agrippina starves to death, essentially, once she's been accused of misdeeds by Tiberius, as do Nero, her son, and Drusus, her other son.
Yeah, so a whole stack of them, they're all sort of, you know, gotten out of the way.
Bumped off.
That's unfortunate.
Yes, however,
Caligula is invited to join Tiberius on Capri.
Ooh.
Oh, goody. Let's go and visit the man.
That's right.
In his summer residence.
That's right.
This guy that hates my mom.
Yeah.
Sure, why not? Importantly, I think things to note about Caligula before he goes to Capri, because this happens in sort of what?
The '30s, yeah.
Yeah, it was like he's about sort of 19. He's just taken the toga virilis when he goes to Capri.
1920, yeah.
And it's a few years before. So it's like 29 when Livia dies.
Yes.
Eventually, because she well outlives Augustus.
Absolutely.
She's been hanging around all
go
this time.
Yeah.
Go Livia. She dies, and Caligula is one of the people who gives an eulogy for her. And this is prior to him attaining the toga virilis.
Yes.
So this is seen as quite significant as
Absolutely.
Well. So he's got a little bit of a public showing beforehand.
Yes.
And then he's sort of invited / ordered to Capri to hang out with Tiberius and his cousin, Caligula's cousin, Tiberius Gemellus.
Yes, who is the son of Tiberius's son, who had died by this stage. One of a set of twins, I believe, but only
one
survived.
Yes. Yeah.
Oh god, this is such a terrible tale. They're always saying that
these are going downhill for this family, really.
So they're both summoned to Capri. Presumably so Tiberius can, you know, train them up, keep an eye on them.
Yeah, hopefully not for sexual shenanigans.
No. I mean, our sources obviously put a bit of an unfortunate spin on things, in that the training that Tiberius allegedly gives Caligula is perhaps of a malicious nature. Famously, you know, he apparently says of Caligula that he's nurturing, you know, a viper in his bosom, you know, and it's not a
phaeton for the world.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yes. But of course, this is probably with the benefit of hindsight. Let's not.
I don't know if Tiberius would have known this.
No.
There are also rumors that Caligula was part of a conspiracy that killed Tiberius.
Absolutely, yes. That he became involved with the new Praetorian prefect who replaced Sejanus, who had so betrayed Tiberius. That Caligula worms his way into favour with this new Praetorian prefect, Macro, and his wife.
Mm.
In fact, when I say worms his way in, I mean starts sleeping with them.
Inside, really inside.
Yeah, really right in there. Yeah. With Macro's wife, and therefore, you know, gets into their good books, and together they somehow bump off the aging Tiberius.
Yeah, a bit of a stab here, a little bit of a pillow to the face there, maybe. There's a few rumours. But again, this is all sort of building a negative rhetoric for Caligula that's going to sort of influence some of the what we learn in hindsight. So
certainly, yes. Yeah,
how much you want to take this with a grain of salt?
Of
well,
course, because I mean, you know, this is in Tiberius's fortress of solitude in Carpathia. This is taking place.
Does information get in and does information get out?
We don't know. We don't know.
Anyway, Tiberius is dead now.
Yes. Caligula wins.
Caligula makes a really good showing in these initial phases. Absolutely. After Tiberius dies.
Everyone's really happy. Which I'm really upset about.
I think they're kind of really happy that Tiberius dies. So exactly. Tiberius dies on the 16th of March in 37 AD. And 2 days later, so it doesn't take very long at all, the Senate, the soldiers acclaim Caligula as imperator.
Yep.
And
he's back in Rome not long after that.
Well, it takes a little bit while longer to get back into Rome, but he's acclaimed imperator by the soldiers in Misenum, so yep. Sort of the port that leads you off the mainland to Capri.
Yep.
And it's a few days after that the Senate sort of ratify that, and they also offer him all of the
powers
of the princeps.
And the power package.
Well, this is really important. This is the first time that this has really happened.
Exactly. Tiberius didn't give them to Caligula while he was still alive.
Well, and also, so Tiberius, because he's sort of granted some of them during Augustus's lifetime, he accrues them slowly and gradually over time.
Yeah.
And this is the first moment where it's like, it's a legal sort of thing. They clump them all together and they say, here you go, Caligula, have fun with it. You're
the
wild.
Yeah.
and this is interesting because Caligula waits for Tiberius's body to arrive from Capri to the mainland. And then he escorts Tiberius's ashes to Rome.
Ah, such pietas.
Yeah, such devotion, loyalty. Apparently the crowds love this.
Yeah.
You know, they're meeting him on the way. They're calling him cute things like sweetheart and
duckling.
So there's a lot of positivity around this. Everybody sees it as a bit of a new age.
Absolutely. Especially since he's still quite young, obviously, at this stage, you know, considering how old Tiberius had been, you know, by the time Augustus carked it.
We've got this fresh generation and he's got this legacy of being the son of Germanicus.
Absolutely. I mean, we cannot underrate just how popular Agrippina and Germanicus
I know we
were.
Haven't devoted a lot of time to Germanicus,
no.
But he is like the most charismatic guy that you can ever imagine.
Exactly.
According
I mean,
to
and I mean,
sources.
In a sense, it's also, you know, for him, it was also a bit of a carry on because his father, Drusus, was apparently super popular as well. I mean, it's really funny, but anyway.
Yeah, so there's a lot of positivity coming from the family background.
Absolutely, yeah.
And Caligula is riding that way.
Yeah.
Big
now,
time.
Now, of course, there must have been some nervous people in in Rome at this stage because, of course.
Are you nervous?
I'm not. I'm on Tiberius's side.
Well, and they have a right to be nervous, really. So.
Yes.
I mean, there's a lot of celebration going on. There's a sense in which this is a new dawning of the age. But Caligula has also made sure that Tiberius's will is considered to be null and void.
Yes.
Which means that the intended plan from Tiberius's perspective that Caligula would share power with Tiberius Gemellus is completely overridden.
Yep.
Caligula sort of gets around this by saying, look, Gemellus is too young. I know I'm not heaps older than him, but that guy's way too young.
Yeah.
So I'll adopt him as my son,
yes.
And he can be next after me.
Oh, it's so fair.
And everyone's like, sure.
We'll do what you are. Sure on you, buddy, new emperor. Huh?
Yeah. And Gemellus must be, like, having a tantrum in the corner somewhere going, why me? This dude. I thought we were cousins.
Yeah. We've been living together in Capri, being abused.
I mean, all of that pain that we shared, and you're now just going to ditch me, and I get nothing out of this.
Yeah. So this is what happens. And basically, the nerves must also be because, obviously, the Senate might share, I suppose, some of the responsibility for not stopping the death of Agrippina and Caligula's two brothers.
Oh, yeah. There is a little bit of... there'll probably be some people who are thinking maybe there's some...
Maybe we're kind of a little bit implicated. Yeah.
Out there for me. Caligula sort of washes over all of that by sort of granting...
Puts their mind at ease.
Yeah, he sort of cancels all outstanding court cases and he burns all the documents associated with the deaths of his mother, Agrippina.
Yeah,
and his brother, and he says, look, I haven't even read them, and I don't want to, and I never can now, so it's like totes over people.
Yeah, I'll never know. It's all good.
Yeah, and he recalls people from exile. He basically puts a general goodwill feeling out by saying, look, the past doesn't count. We're going to start off with a fresh beginning.
Yep.
Everybody's innocent as far as I'm concerned.
Yep.
I like people. I know people like me. So let's just...
It's just all good vibrations. Yeah, it's just a love fest.
You know, it's going to be great. He went as far as to recall some banned texts out of censorship and said, look, there's no reason why they can't be read. They'd been censored under Claudius. And he was like, look, it's going to be fine. There can't be anything in there that's going to bother me.
Yeah, of course. Absolutely.
Augustus. Oh, I
was just looking at you going, what?
Claudius.
Claudius already.
Claudius. Augustus.
And of course, he does do some things there are still some things that he has to do in connection with the past, in that he recovers the remains of his mother and Nero and looks after them. So he's not
brings
completely...
them back, sticks yeah. them in the mausoleum
exactly.
where they're supposed to be.
Exactly. So he is showing that he's not entirely forgotten the past, but it's in a personal way.
Yeah.
So I mean, everyone must have been relieved. It must have really seemed awesome.
Everyone's like, yay!
Yeah, and
it's important, I think, too, that Caligula goes to Rome straight away.
Yes.
All of a sudden, we've got a princeps
back
who's
in
interested in being. Princeps.
Absolutely.
Tiberius is sort of being on Capri, it's not enough. You've got to be in Rome.
Yeah, and then in September of that same year, he's granted the title Pater Patriae, which is, again, big deal, you know.
Pretty significant.
I mean, Augustus had refused it for a long time.
Considering he's a young bunny.
Yeah, exactly. Augustus had refused it for a long time.
Yeah.
He only accepted it, as I mentioned, in about 2 AD, by which stage he'd been, in charge for a couple of decades, really. So this is a big thing, especially to give someone so young and new to the job. But part of the whole love fest continuing.
I love you guys. Yeah. And it's like, we love you too, man. Yeah.
But then, unfortunately, disaster strikes.
Disaster. Yeah, I mean, things go downhill fairly quickly, and some of the speculation centres around Caligula's illness.
Yes. He falls ill sometime after he's granted this title of father of his country. And there's been so much retrospective diagnosis by historians, what kind of illness was it? Did it drive him insane?
Did it change his personality?
Exactly, yeah. What exactly happened? I mean, was it a brain fever? Did it affect...
Because we have this, good Caligula for, 6 months, and then we have, bad Caligula. And obviously the illness must be related somehow.
Exactly, yeah. So there's lots of retrospective speculation about this. Because after this point, he does recover. But then... the ominous signs begin. Gemellus is...
So speculation starts to mount that Gemellus is plotting, at least as far as Caligula is concerned. So Gemellus, although he'd been given the honorary title of Prince of the Youths, which was supposed to be quite sort of his compensation for not being, really emperor.
Such great compensation.
It doesn't take long for Caligula's suspicion... to be like, oh, wait a minute, this dude's probably a genuine threat, and
I'm
going to
get him out of the
way. Do it now.
Why put it off what you can do today, tomorrow?
Yeah, yeah. If you could solve a problem, just solve it.
Exactly, yeah. So he's wiped out. Then Junius Silanus, Caligula's father-in-law, or ex-father-in-law, is basically ordered to suicide. He's no more.
Yeah, so we start to see what is going to be the gradual expansion of informing
again
under Caligula. And this is one of the things that had happened under Tiberius.
Where people really didn't like.
Yeah, where people are kind of paid for the information that they provide. So if you hear a rumour or you make one up or whatever, and you pass it on to the right people, there's compensation involved for that. And... this can lead to trials, and obviously the more the merrier, and if you can get them on something like treason, my Esther, as I like to refer to it as, or so much the better.
Yes, and
so,
Caligula's personality just starts to become, according to the sources, more erratic. Now, of course, our sources are basically senatorial.
Well, the trouble is our sources are senatorial. They're coming from a period that a few generations removed from Caligula's rule.
Yes.
And we don't necessarily have a good distinction to be made between, how is this transition happening?
Exactly.
How soon or how quickly or how terrible do things really become? Was this something that Caligula was likely to always do? Probably.
Exactly. I mean, this is the thing. He, you know, later on in his reign, you know, he starts whipping out documents that he hadn't actually burnt after all. Surprise, surprise.
I just found another copy of those documents.
How convenient.
This is the sort of thing that makes him sound like a caricature of evil.
Exactly. I mean, you know, we hear all these funny stories about ways that Caligula made the senator's life hell. You know, like wanting to make his horse a senator. You know, all these mad stories, which are really driving home this idea of someone who's evil, someone who is quite insane. You know, not just evil,
or somebody
insane.
Who is young and inexperienced and doesn't know how to deal with the Senate.
Exactly.
I mean, this is a guy who spent some of his formative years after he's reached adulthood out of Rome.
Yes.
He's been having to hang out on Tiberius's secret island. And there's not necessarily for him to get trained properly. His father dies before he can really sort of bring him into line about these sorts of things.
Absolutely. And so, like, Tiberius had the benefit of, you know, years and years by Augustus.
Tiberius is schooled in the Augustan slow progression through into power.
Caligula is really just, I mean, we don't really know what Tiberius did with Caligula while they were in Capri, but, Caligula is essentially just thrust into the limelight with all this power all of a sudden.
Yeah, and I think I've always thought of Caligula as a bit of a Lindsay Lohan figure.
Yeah.
I've always felt a little bit sorry for him. And she's a good modern parallel. Too much, too young.
Exactly.
Drives you insane.
Yeah, and I mean, if you kind of read between the lines of the sources, sometimes you can kind of see that maybe it wasn't so much that Caligula was evil or mad. Maybe it was just that he had a really unfortunate sense of humor, which unfortunately no one had.
The Senate didn't really get,
but unfortunately no one had because of his position, no one really has the courage to tell him that what he's doing is wrong.
This is the trouble as well. How do you call somebody out for being a douche when they're the emperor?
Exactly.
Well, you don't have heaps of options up your sleeve.
And especially since that person is someone like Caligula, who, he does seem to let his power go to his head a little bit, and he does seem to relish the fact that people can't tell him what to do.
And certainly there must have been some negative feeling left in the Senate from his dealings with him, which has left a legacy of those sorts of stories.
Yes.
Like, we get the really crazy stuff, like sending his troops all the way out to the edge of France and then being like, all right, we're going to kill the British, but first pick up the seashells.
Exactly. Yeah.
Now the enemy's been conquered, let's head home,
exactly,
guys.
Like all these really weird stories.
And you think to yourself, can you really rationalize that? And sometimes historians sit down and they do try to rationalize these things.
Yes.
I'm not sure that they're worth rationalizing.
No, exactly. I mean, he reigns for such a brief period of time as well. I mean,
we're dealing with a 4-year period.
Exactly. I mean, we don't really even
know
where
the first 6 months is nice. And the next 3.5 years are a sliding scale of bad.
If we look at his reign from the point of view of, say, the populace, I mean, obviously we don't have many, you know, sort of first-hand sources or anything, but it seems that he maintained his popularity
with the
wider Roman people. It's really with the Senate that things go bad.
So, like, he was good at gladiatorial shows. He put on lots of them. People liked that sort of thing.
Yep.
Apparently brought in some specialist boxers from various areas.
Absolutely.
This was well-received.
And he was good, as you say, like, he sort of relished in his role. And so the first time people are, as you say, they're seeing their emperor back in Rome and, you know, quite happy to play a public role, you know, not sort of resenting every...
Yeah, and I think there might be some sort of leeway there for Caligula to get away with some of this stuff, at least in the beginning.
Yeah.
Because
the only people
it's
here,
showy
yeah.
and it's overblown and it's circuses.
And they love it,
And it's good times. Yeah. And, you know, he's having stage plays where he's decided to put them on at night and lighting up the city, and everyone's like, wow,
exactly.
The city's lit up at night.
Yeah,
nobody can believe it.
The only subjects he seems to have, like, seriously, seriously pissed off are some of his Jewish subjects, because he made the mistake of demanding to be worshipped as a god. And he wanted to use the Temple of Jerusalem for that purpose. So
that foreshadows some of the things that are going to happen later
exactly. So they're the only people we can tell that he really, you know, pisses off in any major way. But what we're left with, of course, are the remnants of the Senate and that sort of thing. But of course, the sources can't resist when anyone's, you know, in a when they're looking at someone in a bad light, talking about their naughty goings on.
Oh yeah, and Caligula's stories tend to take the cake with this sort of
thing. Oh yeah,
as well. Hello, sisters.
Yeah, he's. I mean, I have to say, his stories top the cake of even, you know, the babies in Tiberius, because of course the other survivors of Tiberius's reign are Caligula's three sisters.
Hmm.
Livilla, Agrippina the Younger, and Drusilla.
Yes. Most infamously, Drusilla.
Yes. Allegedly, Caligula commits incest with all of them. And, you know, and also not only himself, he commits incest himself, obviously, but he also hands his sisters out, apparently, to his favourites. His particular penchant is for Drusilla.
Yeah, now this is obviously something that you'd have to decide for yourself what side of the debate you want to come down on.
Yes.
Is this just more of that political sexual invective?
Exactly.
That is coming through just because everybody is so bamboozled by what Caligula has done and they just can't understand how he went from being this nice, cute boy to this emperor who's demanding and difficult,
yeah.
And check out my horse in the Senate house,
yeah.
And how about those seashells, boys?
Yeah.
And they're sort of trying to wrap their heads around this, and they're like, well, yes, he must be sleeping with his sisters as well.
Exactly. I mean, apparently with Drusilla, it's not just, you know, a casual thing. He apparently, although she has a husband, he apparently sort of lives with her like they're a married couple. Like, he treats her like his wife.
Look, it's really significant that when she dies, he is devastated by this.
Absolutely.
And he changes the course of Julia Claudian iconography by having her installed as a god.
Absolutely. I mean, this is a big thing. And I mean, this is another point where historians sort of point to and say, maybe this event is what really, you know, pushed him over the edge. Because it happens in 38, so not long after he... I mean, things have already started to go downhill, but this doesn't help, obviously.
Yeah, the consecration of Drusilla is unprecedented.
Yes.
I think a lot of traditional Romans think it's offensive.
Yes.
And it doesn't... This is the sort of event that I think sort of... in retrospect, allows those sort of incest rumours to really
exactly,
grow legs,
yeah, that excessive grief.
Yeah.
And then, of course, puzzlingly, after the death of Drusilla, Caligula doesn't retain his fondness for his other two sisters. there seems to have possibly been a conspiracy involving these remaining two sisters and one of their husbands, perhaps, but they end up getting sent into exile themselves. So
nobody's safe, really.
No, exactly. I mean, he apparently...
A little bit of incest, a little bit of exile.
Yeah, exactly. He apparently torments them by sending messages to their imprisonment on islands, saying that as well as islands, he had swords. So it must have been pretty stressful, these two sisters, to go from being so beloved, apparently.
Yeah, well, they're particularly exalted. The coinage suggests that they're given a certain prominence.
Yeah, all of them.
All
yeah,
three sisters
yeah,
appear
absolutely.
On coins.
Yeah. And this is, I mean,
their
of course,
downfall is
their
surprising from
yeah.
that point.
I mean, and, you know, some of them say, the sisters have husbands, Caligula has wives during this period, but they're still alarmingly close. Yeah, exactly. And, you know, this is the other thing we get in the sources. It's not just his sisters that Caligula is getting up to no good with. Apparently he, you know, debauches... certain actors, he debauches with boys, he debauches with, married, respectable women.
Where does he find the time?
I know.
Fit it all
apparently,
in?
You know, he flaunts this by, taking women off while, he's at a dinner party and then bringing them back noticeably dishevelled. And then we'll proceed to talk about their performance and their merits in the sack in front of the rest of the dinner guests. So, I mean, he really, sexually, he really takes the cake.
Yeah, we're hitting the sort of, this is the threshold of amazing stories, really,
yes.
From that perspective. And certainly this is all leading nicely into what will be the ultimate decline of Caligula.
Yes, exactly. His last wife he apparently married because, not because she was the most beautiful woman or anything like that, but because she was equally
debauched.
Yes, exactly.
Finally.
Yes. Although, even he apparently, part of their kinky foreplay was him threatening to kill her as well.
Oh, God.
Oh, he's so much fun. So you can perhaps see how things...
I'm sorry. I'm just having moments where I'm like, they're in the bedroom and he's like, I'm the emperor. I could have you executed.
Yeah.
And it's like,
ooh.
No, just do me.
Yeah. Impregnate me, your majesty.
I see your sword.
Yeah.
Please stab me.
Repeatedly, again and again and again. So you can understand why Caligula is not remembered with fondness, perhaps. And of course,
the trouble is that, that from the point of time these stories start to kick in, and what we start to see in our source material is a real falling away of anything of political note.
Yes.
There's a real sort of discrepancy between the achievements of his early rule,
yes,
prior to his illness and sort of just a little bit after, and what tends to take up the narrative structure of our source material from that point onwards, which is craziness, debaucheriness, poorly judged military exercises.
Absolutely, yeah.
And it sort of leaves this sense in which Rome is sort of descending into its own special sort of chaos.
Yep.
And they're not really left with many alternatives but to get rid of the guy. So.
And that they do. Ah. In 41, there is a successful conspiracy. Caligula is assassinated.
And see, this is the trouble as well. I mean, this guy has been worried and concerned about conspiracies for a little while, and perhaps rightly so. And the trouble with these sorts of situations is that you only ever know about the successful conspiracy.
Yes, exactly.
How many of them are unsuccessful? Well, you don't get to measure.
Exactly.
That,
I mean, it casts my Estes trials in a whole new light.
Maybe they were wise.
Maybe they were. I mean, there definitely is some plotting going on, because one of them succeeds and he's stabbed repeatedly to death. And then of course there's the fallout in which his baby daughter is apparently smashed against a wall.
They want to leave no trace of that particular generation particular line within the house.
But then of course we're left with a dilemma. Who to succeed?
Yes. Well, on that sort of cliffhanger.
I know. Who will be the next Julia Claudia Emperor? Find out next time.